When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to Marvel Movie Talk right here on Geekscape. Very excited to talk about Loki season 2, episode 4 here on our show today. And as always, I am Christian Blatt, joined by the Council of Marvel Movie Talk. Next to me, for those on your screen, our pal Nate Miller. Nate, thank you for being here.
Hello.
And in the center square, Jim J. Bullock, Eric Connor.
Greetings, one and all. Lovely and, to see you.
And of course, where would sunshine be without its rays? The one, the only, Miss Minutes himself, Michael Shirley. Hello, sir. Thank you for being here with us.
You're very welcome.
And, you know, I it's a little sad compared to last week. I've still got Loki sauce, but nothing to dip in it today. So I kept looking out the window, and Eric did not drive by.
I'm sorry. Maybe if you left me more than a 2-star review last time.
Well, it was cold by the time I got my food last week. In any case, by the way, our pal David Brody will be joining us again this week momentarily. I got a text from him that was confusing. He was running late. I think he was grooming Dog the Bounty Hunter, but that might be wrong. We'll ask him when he gets here.
Wait.
I think I might have read it wrong. But let's start with Nate. Episode 3 ended with, you're not going to like what I had to say. And unlike almost every show you ever watch, they start right at that moment. And there was a lot packed in from there in terms of really moving the story along. What were your thoughts, big picture, overall on episode 4, Nate?
I liked it. I have really been enjoying the pace. It does feel like there's kind of a lot crammed into all of these episodes, but I much prefer that than the feeling like we're watching a bunch of filler. I think the performances are good. Not a lot, but a little bit of kind of character progression. And it felt like a very good penultimate episode for the season. I liked it. I liked it a lot.
Well, unless I'm mistaken, I think there's 2 more because this is episode
4.
Oh,
is there? Yeah. Oh, I thought, okay. Well, then but, even more so. I'm surprised at how much they kind of shook things up, especially with the end of the episode.
Yeah, no, I agree wholeheartedly. And Eric, what are some of your big picture thoughts? We'll go into specifics in a little bit. Specifics, sure. Even.
Now, my specific thought is I thought the ending was tremendous. We'll go in deeper on that, I'm sure. But I think this show is still to me, despite or because of Michael Shirley's feelings about the show, only it kind of deepens my love for it. I think I do have some issues with some of the pacing along the way, though I agree with you, Nate, that I think it compared to other Marvel shows, this one at least has a real energy to it. And I think also is taking advantage of this sort of model of TV in ways better than most of the TV series that Marvel's done. But I will be sad when the season wraps up, to be honest, because I've despite some hiccups, I think it's been a real fun ride once again. And I do hope this is not the end of Loki.
Yeah.
I think Michael feels the opposite.
Christian, can we make that a drop, that sound he just made?
Just Michael going, ugh. Yeah, we can. And I want to let everyone know we're not playing America's favorite new game just yet. So we will find out what Michael liked. Craig has a really good idea. I have some thoughts. I want to wait for Mr. Brody to be here, especially since he was the one who helped us craft the game everybody's playing at home. But Michael, I like to think that your viewing of this show, it's a lot like the power surges at the TVA, the way the lights keep flickering on and off, and then it's in the dark. And ultimately, Michael, you would just be happier if you got cubed by the before the hour was over, because you're like, well, at least I didn't have to finish it. Is that even close to an approximation for how you're feeling, Michael?
I want to do some cubing. I agree with Eric that the end, well, it could have been great if that was the end of the series and they're all dying.
Okay.
That would have been a great, I would have said this show is great, but no.
Well, and with us now is David Brody. David, I think I misread your text. My understanding was that you were running late because you were grooming Dog the Bounty Hunter, but perhaps I didn't quite read close enough. That might actually be the case.
No, that's right. I started him when he was young, and he's okay. Into all the things I wanted him to be into.
It's not even what I meant. I meant you were shaving his head.
That's perfect. Well, thank you. Anyway, I'm glad that you're here. And I think there's no time like the present. We actually have a poster for it now, thanks to Eric Connor. It is time to play America's favorite new game show.
Oh my God.
What did Michael X Shirley like? And yeah, if you can send that to me with the match game attached to it for next week, Eric, that would be great. There's some thoughts, in all honesty, in the chat and beyond, for some of the things that Michael might have enjoyed more than others. And we will go round and see what everybody thinks. But David, I do want to ask you first, just sort of overall thoughts. We'll go into specifics and pacifics, as we established earlier. Yeah. What are some of your big picture thoughts, David?
Well, I enjoyed the episode. I'm very curious as to what's going on with the two Lokis, because one pruned the other one and said, yes, don't worry, it'll all make sense, but it didn't make sense right in the moment. The ending was unbelievable. The whole episode was, I really enjoyed it. I think Victor Timely is not dead. You know, we'll get into the specifics. I liked it. I thought there were a lot of cliffhangers, a lot of what just happened, what am I watching moments. And I think it moved the plot forward, and I really enjoyed OB's interaction with Timely. I had a lot to like in the episode overall. Yeah.
Well, I think that there's a number of characters who we can address, whether or not they are who they seem, and what might be going there. Our pal Craig Robinson in the chat, checking in from across the pond, has the same thought that I did, and that what Michael enjoyed most, and remember, we'll all guess before Michael comments, but I like to think that he watched with glee the same way Miss Minutes did, as quite a few people on the screen were reduced to a tiny little box. And this is just one freeze frame. There are different levels of glee on her face, weren't there, Eric? But you chose this one to send to me.
Yeah, I kind of like the sort of sly grin she has. And Christian, I had the exact same thought. It was one of the reasons I send this to you, is because I think, aside from that end that Michael just explained he enjoyed, so we might have just had a spoiler alert for our game.
That's okay.
I think this moment here feels like Michael felt seen, you know, like on screen.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, it's absolutely a possibility. What do you think, Nate? Is there anything that as you were watching, and it can be the same thing that we thought, was there anything as you were watching where you were like, oh, yeah, this seems like this speaks to Michael Shirley?
I mean, I definitely had that thought when the miss the cubing was going on. But for the sake of diversity, I think the spaghettification of Victor Timely was probably pretty enjoyable for Michael.
That is definitely fun. And Eric, you sent me another cubed group of super-powered individuals you thought that it reminded you of, which, of course, I was going to say it's from Superman 2, but this is actually from the beginning of Superman 1, setting up Superman 2. Yes. In any case, the spaghettification, also another thing that, Eric was very busy with the, I don't know. Do you just point your phone at the TV or do you actually like grab these from Disney Plus? I wonder how much effort you put into this.
As little as possible. So whatever's closest to my hand, no, don't read into that statement. That's what I grab. Don't read into that statement either.
That explains the Miss Minutes part.
Yeah, exactly. Well, are you going with the majority? Did you pick a scene, or are you with me, Eric? Do you think it's that Miss Minute scene, or are you with Nate and you think it's Spaghetti Arm Timely?
By the way, that frame is amazing.
It's pretty great.
Yeah, because it also looks like there's sauce in the bottom of it too. So it's a very complete meal.
Loki sauce.
Oh, speaking of, by the way, I brought my sauce as well, and I'm going to try with pickle flavored potato chips. It's going to be amazing.
Oh my gosh.
I'm here for it.
I didn't know that we were turning into a snack stream. Okay, great.
Yeah. It's becoming like a Japanese game show. This Miss Minutes, her glee and joy, and also specifically something I thought Michael would really like too, the sound, because they didn't really show blood, but when you hear the sound of the blood dripping out of the cube and it held on what's his name's face for that, I thought that might be a moment Michael liked as well, depending on if he had a good sound system, which I bet he does.
Oh, I'm sure he does. I'm sure he has the best.
Bose, baby. Well, Bose.
Yeah.
Of course. Well, what do you think, David? What do you think would be the standout from this episode for Michael Shirley? You can go with any of the pre-existing votes. Cast a dark horse candidate wherever you feel like it would stand out for him.
Well, I thought Michael may have liked, but not his first choice, may have liked when Miss Minutes had all that attitude and said, access denied. I thought he would have liked that. but I went with, because that may be more his persona. He liked, thought he liked the attitude, but based on the fact he doesn't like the show, a similar offshoot to some of the other comments, my thought was, he liked the sound of the bones cracking inside the cube.
Yeah.
When the camera was on X5 or B5, whatever his name is, and all you heard was the cracking of the bones, I think that's the moment he went, yes!
So you think of him as McKee de Shirley. You think he's one of the biggest masochists is really what you're thinking. By the way, speaking of pain, Cammy Egan just threw up her lunch a little bit at the thought of pickle chips and Loki sauce. The Loki sauce is honestly not the thing to be uncomfortable about.
Wasn't that a Peter Brady line, a pickle chips and Loki sauce?
I think it might be. So, Michael, without any further ado, please tell us what stood out for you in this episode.
I thought you guys were going to get this like right on. I thought it was a dead giveaway. No one wants to change. All right.
I'm sorry. Your answers are locked in. Those are final answers.
Yeah. Okay.
Who wants to be a millionaire? There's no
change. Wait, I know. The list of Swedish voice actors.
No. My favorite part was like the 2-3 seconds when I thought Loki was being pruned. He was like evaporating. And then I see
that does make sense, actually.
The other Loki behind him. And I literally started screaming, no!
It was the death of the character. We were all close.
No, we honestly should have gotten it. And you're right. It was literally right there in front of us. And but now that we're talking about it, what did you think about Miss Minutes bringing some real attitude into this show? Really this season more so than last year. But I think we really got to spend a little bit more time within the depths of Miss Minutes in this episode.
I think everything going on with her is really creepy and weird and strange, and I don't like her.
Would you like her if she did kill Loki in, say, episode 5? That would just change your opinion entirely.
Yeah, yeah, MVP.
Yeah, but you could say that about any character. So
yeah,
that's a great point. I like that it's really just a split screen of Michael and Miss Minutes, and Miss Minutes, of course, being the real star of this episode. Eric, you could just tape that, the Miss Minutes, to your camera. Well, let's talk sort of about, this idea that, so the big reveal, we'll kind of go through this episode a little bit. The big reveal was that He Who Remains lied specifically to Renslayer, letting her think that, she was going to rule all time with him. But I don't know. I don't think she should have been surprised. The only thing is that she was surprised because she had all of her memories erased. let's sort of go through and see what everybody thinks about Renslayer in this episode. And starting with Nate, I'm going to ask, do you think she's gone for real, or will we see her again in the next two episodes?
No, we'll definitely see her again. I mean, we already know that the pruning is not killing. It's just sending them to the end of time, into that void space where Elias is, right? And like, not only is she going to be there, but so is that Loki that was time slipping, that we just saw got pruned, which is the same scene that we saw in the first episode when he was time slipping. So there's a lot of weird time travel-y stuff in this episode, even more so than we've dealt with before. Yeah. And I think it's just the next two episodes are going to also continue that trend of getting more and more like, all right, like they're kind of still fleshing out this idea of it being a circle, and we're seeing more. This episode had the first concrete time where, unless I'm mistaken, we saw a scene that we had seen before from a different angle.
We definitely had that. Sylvie opening the elevator, and then Loki sneaks up behind Loki and prunes Loki. I do believe that that's exactly, and we've had the phone ringing in episode 1, so we got to see who was on the other end of that phone call. And our pal Craig Robinson said, "It's a shame it wasn't Morpheus from Outside the Matrix on the other end of the phone." Which
I did love, that. There was a lot of like kind of horror, like thriller vibes in this episode, and like the score and the shots and stuff. And I love that there was that whole thing with the phone, and he picks up the phone and he's like, "What's taking you guys so long?" It was just like a normal call from over there. I thought that was just a really good misdirect of like, and a nice kind of a relief of tension that they had been building up. But to get back to Renslayer, yeah, I think that she is very important. We're going to see in this whole cycle of the loop. There's a reason why she was left in charge of the TVA after the last memory wipe. And I think especially now that she knows how one of those loops ends for her, that she might do something different this time, which I think is what's going to create the events that lead into, the Kang Dynasty movie stuff. but she, especially like when they play that little video back that she's watching before she gets her mind wiped, and she talks about how, like, I forget exactly what she says, she's like right by his side, why she chose him to ally with him in the multiversal war, presumably. So if we're following by the logic of everything is cyclical and everything that we've seen at the end is still going to happen, that point is still going to happen post her getting her mind wiped. So since she is pruned and in the void end of time, if at some point there she meets another version of Kang or something, that's, I'm assuming, who becomes He Who Remains, and she helps them win the war by using the knowledge she already knows, something like that. All I know is that she is very important to Kang's story, and her getting pruned is not like, oh, she's dead, she's gone. It's just putting her in another space, you know, until that part of the story device becomes relevant again.
Right, exactly. And also, I want to give Nate credit. You used the allegory last week, the snake eating its own tail, which was then discussed within this own episode as it relates to the TVA handbook. The fact that Victor Timely wrote it, but he told OB how to write it, having already read the handbook that OB read, which is exhausting to try and take it all in. That's why I don't time travel, because it's just too hard to keep track of how it all makes sense. David Brody, your thoughts on Renslayer, the big reveal that we get at the beginning of the episode, and the seeming demise, but really just, you know, neutralizing her in this specific episode, David.
Well, if it's anything to do with her comic book role, then yes, she has a lot more to do, as I'm sure, right, you know, Nate knows. He referenced her comic book life, I believe, last week. I like the thought that maybe she runs into a version of He Who Remains in the void, right, where she got pruned. And that's how, you know, because she knows everything, much like the handbook, she knows everything that's going to happen, so she can help win again because she knows how they won, or if she remembers how they won because she had her mind wiped. So what she remembers about winning is hard to say.
Right.
But as far as like the book thing, who wrote the book, you know,
yeah,
and that it's hard to follow. I mean, I followed it, but then if you try to think about it, your head will hurt because there is no answer to who wrote it.
Correct.
Based on what they've shown you so far, unless someone else wrote it. And then, you know, I mean,
don't worry about it.
Yeah.
Well, no, some of us are trying to understand the show. I like to believe that OB wrote it the first time before anything else. And I'm standing by that because it's easy.
No,
I don't have to think of it.
What's established is OB wrote the book.
Yes.
But he wrote the book based on stuff that Victor Timely told him.
Correct.
Okay. And Victor Timely told him stuff that was based on the book that OB wrote.
Right.
Very chicken or the egg.
So yeah, I'm going back. All right, I guess I'll have to go back to Victor Timely then.
Yeah, it's a paradoxical, like,
yeah,
it's not like a wavy, like, it's like this, like it just kind of always was, at least within the timeline that they have been operating in. Once the loom explodes and all these timelines are no longer restricted, who knows what is going to happen to that cycle? But within the cycle that they have so far existed in, OB wrote it from what Timely taught him, and Timely taught him from what OB wrote. So, like, there really is no first or last, at least from what we understand.
Right. I think that's what they're trying to definitely establish. Well,
unless Kang wrote it, went back in time, and pretended to be Victor Timely, knowing that there would be a Victor Timely created, pretended to be Victor Timely, wrote the book, gave it to OB, and then set in motion Victor Timely being created.
Well, I think that that does bring up the sort of important last words of Miss Minutes before she's taken offline, which is telling Victor Timely, you'll never be him, you know, just sort of reminding him that, you know, he's a variant and he's not He Who Remains. Presumably he's also not Kang. He's not Ramatut. He's not Immortus. You know, he's none of those. Victor Timely is his own being in variation of that, but we can kick that around a little bit more. I wanted to show this image that our pal Eric shared with me, which of course is the spaghetti arms in Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness. And Craig Robinson wanted to ask if Victor Timely was turned into spaghetti because he got Fantastic Four, Doctor Doom radiation vibes. Is this what leads to He Who Remains? I'll ask you on that, Eric, and I also want to get your thoughts on Renslayer.
One thing when I was watching this episode, I was actually struck that it felt closer to some of the imagery from Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness. So there was this one exterior shot I also sent from Doctor Strange that just visually looked so much like this. And the spaghetti arms thing, I don't think is a coincidence either. So I think it was actually starting to do something I've been, you know, since really season one of Loki, post season one of Loki, which is like, well, if you're gonna multiverse, then why not use this show, which is kind of at the center of the multiverse, literally with that loom? Like, why not, like, actually use that as some of the justification for what's happening in all these various films? And so I thought actually it was kind of smart to sort of lean a little bit into Multiverse of Madness without hitting it too much on the nose. Like, if you catch it, you catch. If you don't, you don't. I don't think it's an accident, though, that unless they just went to the same effects guys and like, oh, yeah, you know how much money? Well, we get that spaghetti effect. We'll just put him through the spaghetti maker instead.
Yeah, for our visual audience, I am sharing the exterior that you referenced from Multiverse of Madness. And yes, I think the aesthetic is clearly established in the MCU and therefore the accompanying TV series, that this is what these sort of nexus events, these sort of centers of time, space, multiverse connection, the quantum realm, you know, there's definitely a visual feel for all this stuff that it feels consistent. So it does ask questions, but I don't have any answers. I couldn't even figure out who wrote the TVA handbook. So,
well, I have a theory. I think, yes. I think OB wrote the novelization of the TVA.
Interesting.
And that explains it all. Right, he did the TV or the film version, and the other guy did the novel, so or the screenplay. And I think with that too, we get into Terminator logic, and that's the fun—the fact that we could argue back and forth about this and have all our virginities grow back because we're talking so deep about the snake eating its own tail. And again, Nate, I did think of you when that line was said. I was like, Nate, they don't call him Nate Dogg for nothing.
I just want to say for the record that that's just what Ouroboros means. That so the name, yeah. Like, I'm not like a prophet by any means.
No,
like,
take credit. No, you're smart. You're like, a prophet.
Oh, he said the thing.
Yeah.
Hey, Christian.
Yes.
I'm so smart.
Mr. Brody.
In terms of the spaghettization of people, the Mr. Fantastic is close, but Ant-Man actually, all his replicants did get spaghettified in Quantumania. The exact same way as Timely.
Oh, right.
The exact same spaghettification. Yeah. So Mr. Fantastic was similar, but Ant-Man, whatever happened to the other Ant-Man appearances?
It was more of an udon noodle.
Yes.
Before, right? It was like a thicker noodle, and then they're more
Capolini. My fun. Yeah, Capolini, my fun, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, hopefully... Hopefully in episode 5 we get ramen noodles. Let's bring it back to Renslayer because I want to get your thoughts on that, Eric, before Michael falls asleep.
Maybe I'm crazy. I thought we already knew some of the things with Renslayer. Like, wasn't the record? Please remind me the recording.
Yes,
wasn't that
was episode? I believe episode 1 had the recording in it.
Yeah, but wasn't that her with he?
Did you go back to Georgia, Eric? Because are you still signed into the? Are you still signed into the Wi-Fi in Georgia?
OB is rebooting him.
Mine's being wiped.
You'll never be him.
I put him in timeout for a second. He was definitely glitching, like Loki in episode 1. He's literally down the street from me. If I just open the window, we should be able to hear from Eric easier.
Yeah, can you hear me okay?
Yeah, well, I put you back in. Yeah. It was
I was out, but no, apologies. My internet signal looks actually okay.
The last thing you said, Eric, was you'll never be him, and then you just went out.
Yeah, and then you were gone. Yeah, exactly. Here, we'll all sit really still, and you sit still, and we'll see if that helps. I do want to go ahead and circle back to what your point was, and as we're saying,
you were talking about we heard the message already.
Yeah, and so I thought that reveal wasn't really much of a reveal. Feels like that was kind of stuff we already knew, or at least assumed. And
wow,
I think the other piece too. I think
Eric Connor is brought to you by Spectrum Internet. I'll back channel with him and see what we can do to get a better connection with him.
It's a conspiracy.
Michael, look, we have a bit on the show that's built around how much you don't like the show, but as you're watching it, what are your thoughts? You have to think things other than, oh my God, now it's 38 minutes until it's over. Now it's 37.
Really?
No, I'm assuming if that's what you're thinking, that's fine. And by the way, Craig Robinson comments, time slipping is a bitch. I agree. Yeah.
I stopped the show three times to see how much was left of it.
And each time you did it, was it 49 minutes, 48
the
minutes?
The first time I was like, oh, the first time I was only like a third of the way through and I was hoping I was like over half. It was a long episode this week. It was like 51 minutes. I actually looked. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was
but that counts as Eric referred to, that counts the Swedish voice actors, you know, so the minutes are very, very misleading. You know,
I was hoping for a 38, 39, but yeah, whatever.
By the way, Eric, I have to turn off my background if I want to show it. So Eric goes and he shows me that he's like, I've got full bars. And I'm like, look, if it's the router that you picked up out front of Big Lots from the back of a guy's truck, it doesn't matter what it says your connection is, Eric. So who do you hate the least on this show, Michael? We know Loki is who you hate the most, or do you hate Sylvie the most?
No, I hate Loki the most, for sure.
That's what I thought. Yeah, okay. All right. I just wanted to make sure we were on the right page. Is there a character who you can tolerate a little bit more than some of the others?
The lady that's kind of like the go-between. The one who walks into the room and sees everyone's been cubed and is like...
I believe that's B-15, yes.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. She's probably the one I can tolerate the most.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I at least we found something. And you know, would you like to sit and watch people be cubed with Miss Minutes? You know,
no.
Especially if one of them. No. What if one of them was Loki?
Sure.
Okay.
I was a little disappointed. They didn't. They made all this big are they going to show it? Are they not going to show it? And I thought they were just waiting and they were going to show it. Happen.
I'm surprised we even got the sounds that we got. That was
I am surprised. It's still Disney Plus, even though they had characters say shit like twice within 2 minutes. And if it's not on Disney Plus, I probably don't even notice it. But whenever they do, I definitely try to pass the swear jar up into the screen. I don't know. Eric, I'm going to try to let you finish your point. And,
nah, I don't know. Now it's gone.
Now the moment has passed.
Yeah, I guess it was the lack of surprise, I think, to the reveal was my point. And then the other point was, I'm glad the loom blew up because we have had so many effing scenes of Obi staring at that loom and yelling about what they need to do. And that has gotten really repetitive. And per last time, we were all talking about, like, they have to give Obi more than this, because otherwise, like, they truly could have gotten kind of any actor to play this role. Like, why did they go after him? An actor's truly having a moment to put him in a role where he's just doing the same shtick for, like, multiple episodes now.
Well, it's a good way to move over to talking about Obi, because, you know, we talked a little bit last week that there's more to him than what he seems. There may be there may be memories that he doesn't know he has. And, you know, I think that the mutual appreciation between he and Victor Timely, it was a little bit more than, you know, can you sign my Disneyland autograph book? You know, I think.
Yeah, they need to get a room.
Now that you're right about, I agree 100%. But I can't remember who felt the strongest about the idea that you know, OB is, you know, in cahoots with He Who Remain, and that it's all very coordinated. In terms of Victor Timely, I thought getting himself out of the room in that moment to, you know, give that guy the hot chocolate, I thought there was more to it than that. but then they bring him into a room and they try and get information out of him. It's sort of it kind of went on a dead end. You know, it's like one of those, if you're doing a maze and you feel like you're getting right there to the end, and it's like, oh no, that one just goes to a dead end. You know, it actually didn't go where you thought. Did anybody have similar thoughts about Victor Timely's behavior at the TVA, that the obsession with hot chocolate wasn't so much for laughs, but it was actually part of a plan still yet to be revealed? Or just me?
Yeah, I thought it was really weird. I'm thinking, oh, he's going to throw the hot chocolate on the guard and run away comically or something. I would be very surprised. It does feel kind of like a dead end, but with the way that this show has been written so far, it does make a lot more sense that that is just something that we have not seen fulfilled yet. Because it is kind of a weird, especially with how tight these episodes have been edited. Like, you almost couldn't just do without that scene. Just have them pick him up. Like, it wouldn't have been that much different. I guess maybe to get him alone so that Brad could get him, but I don't know. Yeah, I also was like, this is weird. That was weird. That was the one scene that just kind of stuck out to me.
Right, and similar to Loki pruning an earlier version of himself, that is probably something that we'll get more about. I mean, obviously, spaghetti arms, Victor Timely, I don't think means the end of Victor Timely. Something happened out there, and you know, the only thing missing from the end of the episodes was Journey's Don't Stop Believin'. The way that it just all very abruptly ended, it was definitely a Sopranos finale vibe. But I did enjoy it, but more so than the Sopranos finale, because I know there's two more episodes, so we're gonna get answers. You know, we're gonna find out what actually happens after that. I'm interested in that. What are your thoughts, Mr. Brody, on OB?
I'm not convinced he didn't put Victor Timely in that suit, because I feel like he knew that was going to happen. I feel like that was the plan to get Victor Timely serves a purpose, and going into that radiation suit and being, you know, slammed with radiation and whatever happened to him, I have to believe was part of the plan. The same way last week I said it was Obi's plan to get Victor brought to the TVA by saying only his aura could fix this situation. I feel like he got him into that situation on purpose. And just as a side note, the chocolate milk, the hot chocolate scene was what seemed to me like a scene of convenience, right? They had to get him alone. And they had to get right. I agree, bro. They had to, and that Brad had to come from the direct, the back direction of the guard. That, I mean, it was just too convenient that he would sneak up behind the guard at the moment he was drinking the hot chocolate while Victor was standing far enough away. It was just written so he could be kidnapped. And what was Brad's thought on that? They had no idea he'd be in the hallway by himself. So it was just a poorly written convenience scene, I think, but
unless we, you know, we see things that were edited around that in a future episode, I agree that it might have just gone to a dead end. Speaking of Victor Timely, I want to get the thoughts on Victor Timely from our own Victor Dial-Up, Eric Connor, and see what do you think sort of about
my dog's telling you to go F.
Well, no, I know what a Bahamian fan you've been for the last 23 years. So obviously, it's very difficult to get you near the mic without asking who. But despite that, Eric, your thoughts, sort of what we're talking about, you know, Victor Timely being a little bit more in the know, possibly, and OB being a little bit more of a puppet master during all this.
Yeah, I keep just hoping and hoping and hoping that there is more to OB. And you know, what if there's not? I guess that would be the ultimate twist, maybe. That hot chocolate scene, the first time I watched it, I think I was falling asleep.
Nice.
And I was confused because I thought for a second he had done some kind of like mind control stuff. Yeah. Like, I was really like, because he did that thing with like his fingers and they're drinking the hot chocolate and it goes on. And I thought this was when Victor Timely is going to like pull off the mask and reveal, no, I'm actually gang and I control everything. And yet, and then I finished watching it later when I was more awake and I realized, no, it was none of those things. It truly was just a guy enjoying hot chocolate. And why did he, strange.
Why did he give the hot chocolate to the guard who works there and can have the hot chocolate whenever he wants?
Yeah. It's like, oh, have you ever tried this? Yeah, dozens of times. You know, I'm more of a Senka guy, but sure. Today will be the day that I tried the hot chocolate. Yeah.
If I'm putting my tinfoil hat on.
Yeah.
This would be excellent evidence that Victor Timely has been conning everybody and does know more about what's going on.
Okay.
Because if we were to presume that he knows what's going on and that he knows that he's supposed to get taken and that he's supposed to go out to get shredded to whatever then happens to him, then that could be a sign of him going, okay, I'm now here. You have this because you're about to get zapped. Maybe that's a huge stretch. But I guess we'll find out.
It's not that huge of a stretch to create the situation that led to Renslayer being, you know, pruned, you know, as she was trying to get her out of the way. You know, if he is a little bit more in the know. I did like that they conveniently came up with a way, you know, it's like, well, we have to reboot Miss Minutes, which is fine, except for the fact that anyone who uses magic will be able to do it. Is that going to be okay? Okay, yeah, all right. Thanks for putting that in there. That clearly the story dictated you needed to use magic, so you had to figure out a way around it. You know, it was definitely, we had talked about that in a previous episode, that episode of our show, the inability to use magic is a way to, I guess, to slow down Loki a little bit. But yeah, I feel like the Victor Timely actually knew exactly what was going to happen when he walked through that door of the TVA, that there might be some legitimate disorientation. I do think it's the first time he's actually been there, you know, in this point in his timeline, but that, I don't think that that means that he still didn't know what was going to happen. You know, he's got this book. Who's to say that there's not another book that was presented to him, you know, tossed through the next window, you know, 5 minutes later, that tells him how it's all going to play out. But I guess it really brings us to this idea of, so he goes outside to, you know, help save the TVA. And then there's some kind of cosmic event that ends the episode. What do we think might possibly happen next? And I want to start with the person most invested in the series ending, Michael Shirley. After that big white flash, and the black screen for a few seconds, do you have any hopes for where it opens? Perhaps everyone dressed in black, their head down, and it's Loki's funeral? Any thoughts for what you would hope the episode 5 will start with?
Well, I kind of want to just pretend like that was the finale. I don't know. I think they're all going to be stuck together somewhere, and they're all going to be just pissed off.
Okay, interesting. They'll find themselves in some, like, some other timeline.
Maybe just, like, completely black everywhere. I don't know. Maybe they'll end up at the end of time. I don't know.
Do you think that they might all end up working at Sylvie's McDonald's and not remember any of this stuff, and then we'll just see them fulfilling?
Possibly. I mean, they got 2 episodes to kill. I think it could be anywhere. I think they kind of left this open so they could do whatever they wanted.
Well, it could be anywhere. It could be everywhere. It could be a movie that Craig wanted to chime in. He watched Everything Everywhere All at Once for the first time this week, enjoyed it. And you got to spend some more time with OB, which I think is always fun. What are you thinking in terms of where we could go next, Nate? Sort of, you know, obviously it's wide open completely. You know, we're not going to hold you to anything. You're not putting money on it. We're just sort of wondering what are some things that come to mind that could possibly be what happens next.
I mean, this is exciting for me because this is the stuff that I enjoy most about Marvel, especially in the comics, is like the kind of larger cosmic events and the implications of time travel and, you know, the long century spanning plans of supervillains. So I love the ending. I love that they kind of lost. And I think what we're seeing is there's a reason why they mentioned the snake eating its own tail. I think not just because of the name, but also because when you're looking at that kind of loop, the best way to see where it is a loop is to see that little like indication of a break of the beginning and the end merging together. So I think that's what we're seeing, is we're seeing the end of the tail of that. And I think when we come back, it's going to be, I think this is probably where the multiversal war starts. And just because of the way time travel work, I think we're just going to come back into it happening maybe, or some indication of that. And I think we're going to see the creation of the TVA again, or at least like the first implementation of all of the people that we've seen already with all their minds wiped or something. So I don't know. There's lots of different directions that they could go in, but what makes sense to me is kind of like a reset of the TVA, which, because Loki and Renslayer were both pruned last episode, they're in the void, which maybe is excluded from that explosion thing that happened.
Okay.
So then they're going to be kind of like the main people that are still around, whereas like our Loki and Sylvie and Mobius and everyone's going to be kind of like reset. And because they remember what happened before the reset, they'll be able to like kind of change things. I don't know. I think that's what's going to happen, because obviously something has to break the loop, in order to get the Kang Dynasty and Secret Wars, you know, movie stuff. That's all going to happen. There has to be something that allows Kang to escape the timeline to create the multiversal war again. So I think, what we're seeing so far is all part of the plan to kind of, when he dies, reset everything so he can die again and over and over and over again. But I think because of Loki or Sylvie or something, they've introduced this element of chaos, which has caused Ravonna to have like a heel turn. And now she's going to remember everything, as opposed to all the other times when she didn't. I feel like I'm talking about Westworld right now.
Let me ask, I'm going to ask everybody the same question. Do you think in 2 weeks from now, after episode 6 has premiered, that we'll be talking about season 3 of Loki, or is this series? I know, Michael, that's why I'm not starting with you. Michael just had to, somebody has to put actual physical, those paddles on Michael. We have to revive him. Nate, do you think that we're going to get another season of Loki, or they're going to actually, this second season is what will set up whatever the first of these phase 5 movie events will be?
I'm very on the fence, because I usually always err on the side of less seasons, because I would rather have quality over quantity. But I'm really enjoying the show and the team that is putting it together. So if they feel like they need another third season or another season, I'm totally in. But I think this 2-season format is going to really fit the story that they've laid out already. And I'm hoping that whatever happens is actually going to lead into the movies and not again be like a, wow, here's this really cool cosmic time setup, and then there's just like a sprinkle reference of any of that in the next movie. I'm gonna be pretty bummed if that's the case. So either way, if I had to choose, I would say no, I think this is the end.
Eric, as someone who's gone on record saying that they wished Small Wonder, the sitcom with the robot little girl, had gone 10 seasons in a movie, I know that you feel more seasons, more laughs, more seasons, the better, Eric. But what are your thoughts? Do you think that we're likely to get another season of Loki, or that this part of the story will end 2 episodes from now?
Well, I appreciate you reading my fan fiction of Small Wonder, Christian. It's good to know it's not only out there for myself, but for...
Well, it's also because when I went to your Halloween party last year, you had a signed photo from the actress who played Vicky, the little girl who was the robot. So.
Well, that was my costume. You remember how surprised we were when there was actually an announcement for a second season of Loki?
Correct. Yeah.
You know, and so I think in some ways I'm lining up with Nate. Like, I've enjoyed this so much that there's the hope for more. I mean, and again, the never ending gift of Michael's reactions to this is only more reason. But I hope, honestly, as much as I've enjoyed this show, that maybe they just say, okay, and thus the Council of Kangs has been created, right? I think, yeah, like, because it would very easily explain that in terms of the MCU. I mean, the idea of so many timelines, even him turning into, you know, Capellini, would make sense. I don't know, to your point, David, like, yeah, if this was all by design, then there's a bit of Kang in all the timelines everywhere. Each one its own variant. So I think it could work out that way. I do think the next episode might be the everyone goes back to their old lives. Yeah. So seeing Owen Wilson on his jet ski.
We can only hope for his sake. Yeah.
I mean, we all listen. That would be the ultimate payoff. Is him?
It's going to happen. We're going to see him on a jet ski.
Yeah. Just to interject, I agree. Oh, go ahead. What were you saying,
Nate? If you see him on a jet ski, then there's definitely no season 3.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, is I would think the last time we see him at the end of episode 6, he's on the jet ski.
Well, I'm going to pick something all along. I'm going to pick something a little different, which is, what if next episode, sort of like, I don't know if you guys remember Star Trek Generations, but like the Nexus, you send people to the place where they're happiest and it's hard to get them out of there. So if they go back to their normal lives, if he has the jet skis in the second to last episode, and then he has to give it up to actually restore some kind of order, that feels like a sort of a 1-2 punch in terms of where this episode falls. Like, it feels like get him back into an actual existence of their own volition, and then make them do the ultimate sacrifice of giving up their sort of happiness for the greater good. So that's my guess right now, but.
So you're invoking Star Trek Generations, which is the film that took the two greatest captains in the history of Starfleet. For years, people have been clamoring to see them together and to put them together in a kitchen to make breakfast. Yes, I hope we get to see what will it be like if Mobius and Loki make a Denver omelet. I actually can't.
No. If they make key lime pie together.
Oh, all right. Well, David, what do you think we're going to see next week? And also, do you think these next two episodes are it for Loki? And of course, for the Loki sauce.
Okay, so for next week, I'm gonna tangent off of what Nate said. I think when Loki was time shifting, mm-hmm. you know, he made the comment about he saw Sylvie back at the TVA and something bad was going on. We assume that he saw her the first time she showed up, right? When they were pruning the timelines. Yes. What if he saw the explosion when he time shifted? And what if the Loki that pruned the other Loki is to put the Loki somewhere where he'll be safe so that he can now come back and save them? And he's looping himself because he knows they're all going to be killed or something, whatever happens in the explosion. So he prunes the other Loki so that Loki is safe from the explosion to then save them all from the explosion. Or post-explosion, wherever they ended up.
So send him to the void. You mean, David, like send him to the void?
Yeah. Yeah, I think.
Maybe to get the other variants.
Right. I think Renslayer, and she may be involved also. But Loki, I think Loki sent Loki somewhere to save Loki. I think Loki sent Loki somewhere to save everyone from the explosion that he saw coming because he was time-shifting earlier, and he probably saw that happening.
Right. So your point is that we, as the audience, didn't see everything Loki saw when he was time shifting. So
right.
That one of the things he might have seen is that. And wherever he got pruned to would be where Renslayer ended up. I believe that's what the assumption would be. No?
Unless the stick has different settings, right? Like, there's one button send you to the to where He Who Remains lived. There's one send you to the void with Eliath. You know, who knows? I don't know if it only sends you to the same place. But he sent them somewhere, I think, to save him, because I don't think Loki would kill Loki. Why would he? Because he knows that other Loki's a living thing. It's a living Loki. I think he sent them there because he said it's all going to make sense, right? But then Sylvie maybe it just died, And if she didn't die, then Loki knows what's going to happen to her because he knows she's going to live long enough for it all to make sense. If that makes sense.
Did he kill any of the other Lokis when there were so many Lokis? I don't believe he did, you know, in season one, you know, where we got alligator Loki and everything else. That's what I was thinking. I don't think he did, but that's the one time where he might have been in a situation where he had. He definitely fought them, but I don't think he killed anyone.
Yeah. No, the only one that died that I remember is classic Loki who Eliath ate.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the right. And I'm blanking on that actor's name.
Alan? Is it Alan something?
No, he was in with Nell and I, and I'm just blanking. Great actor, and just can't get to it. Craig says at the end of the finale, I want to see Loki with a huge beard saying we have to go back. It's interesting just how much. Richard E. Grant. I was about to look it up, and then it finally came to me. So my apologies to Richard E. Grant. That I didn't have his name on the tip of my tongue.
Friends call him Alan.
Yeah, his friends do call him Alan. Well, I guess we will see next week where it goes. And Michael, I know you're counting down the missed minutes until then, just finding out what we're going to get. And I'm very glad that Mr. Brody messaged me to remind me that I've been meaning to feature this this article from Entertainment Weekly for several weeks because we talked about the McDonald's location and, you know, so the director talking about, you know, they needed a location that would be Broxton, Oklahoma, and they were in the UK. So it was indeed, they found a restaurant from that era that had been closed, but it was not a McDonald's. So they converted it to McDonald's and they reached out to the McDonald's Corporation, who of course, was only too happy to pass along, you know, some of the wrappers and some of the signage and all of that. And it, you know, it actually had the tree and, you know, all of the background things that we saw. So, you know, it was one of those things that it, you know, they have an old restaurant, but it wasn't an old McDonald's, you know, and I think that it makes it more impressive than if it had just been, you know, some run down McDonald's that that was still standing and they just had to put a new coat of paint on it to have to kind of convert it into that. I thought it was very impressive. And apparently McDonald's sent out some kind of like, I don't know, like a truck. They sent people out and they were cooking food for them throughout the day. So you could tell that those apple pies were actually fresh when they had them. But I just wanted to tidy that up from a few weeks ago. I think, don't you worry, Daniel. I eventually got to Richard E. Grant, but I appreciate both Daniel and Cammy Egan helping me out with that. Anyway, that's our thoughts on episode 4. We will definitely be back next week to talk episode 5. You'll be back next week, right, Michael?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure nothing had changed.
That's our other drop.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And a programming note for those watching live on the Geekscape YouTube channel. Just a little while from now, yours truly and Eric Connor will be doing the Geekscape Book Club. Can I get it to show? Yeah, we'll be talking about Batman The Long Halloween, which will be this month's entry in the Geekscape Book Club. That will be at 3:30 p.m. Pacific, 6:30 Eastern. You can join myself, Eric, and Garrett Briones, and I still have two of the 13 issues to read as we're talking, but it's a fascinating story, and there's a lot of Batman lore that comes after it because this story is from 95-96. There's a lot that I think was inspired by this sort of like Batman Year One, but that's another universe. That's another show. I want to give everybody a chance to let our audience know where they can keep in touch with them. Nate, where can people find you?
You can find me on the internet at Dog Like Nate with 2 G's.
And David Brody. People want to find some Brooklyn Boys. Where do they do that?
They can find the Brooklyn Boys podcast on all platforms. In fact, as of December, we're getting added to the Amazon platform, which I'm very excited about. And you can find me on social media at David Brody, B-R-O-D-Y. No G's.
I spent a lot of time podcasting, and I had no idea there was an Amazon platform. So thank you for letting me know.
it's a thing they're getting behind big time, and they reached out to us, and so we're going to be on it. So I'll have more details the next time we talk in January.
No one has reached out to me, but that's all right. Eric Connor, where can people find you out back turning the crank to power your router?
You can find my Loud Dogs, my Questionable Internet, my Miss Minutes, my Loki Sauce, and my Thor Mug. Man, it's a lot of visuals. You can find all of
them. Are you going to have the pickle chips, or are you going to leave us hanging?
And the pickle chips are over at Count Eric Connor. And yes, listen to the Geekscape Book Club. It's the only way Christian and I read is when there's lots of pictures.
That's a fair point. It is really the only way that we read. And you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at ChristianDMZ. You can also find a number of the shows that I do, the Blackcast, BLADTCAST. That's the main show. And over on the Who Are These Podcasts YouTube channel, you will be able to find the show that I do, Who Are These Broadcasters? And in our next episode, we'll have special guest comedian Don Jameson. So please tune in for that.
Real Don Jameson or discount Don Jameson?
No.
Or variant.
The real Don Jameson. I'm not having any discounts. Now, David, I understand from you that you have a question for Michael about his wardrobe choice.
I do. We're doing a Marvel podcast for a show that Michael doesn't like, and I'm wondering if that's why he's wearing a DC shirt.
Is it a great question? Let's show it off.
Protest.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
That's the number of characters he likes more than Loki. It's like
Is that intentional slap at Marvel by wearing a DC shirt on a Marvel podcast?
No comment. No comment, y'all. No comment.
Okay, well, Cam Egan with something, and I don't think that it's I don't think it's an actual spoiler, but Cam Egan wants to know what we think about Kelsey Grammer possibly popping up as Beast in the Marvels. Look, I think that Kelsey Grammer is so busy tarnishing one of his legacies. I don't know that he's going to be out there doing too many of them. There's only so much time in the life, and he's up to his eyeballs in tossed salad and scrambled eggs. But it's interesting. I do like that iteration of Beast. And Daniel wants us to know that OB explained what happened when Loki would get pruned. What was it? Because look, I usually watch the show and I have to back it up because I fall asleep. So, but I just today I watched it right before we did the show, so I was fresh, and I still don't know. So, Daniel, you might have to message me if because there's a bit of a delay for the chat, but please let us know. Because does anybody know what OB might have said would happen to Loki if he got pruned? Would he end up bathed in pickle chips?
No, I think he said that the time shifting would stop, right? Yeah. He said you need to get pruned, but I don't recall what he said after that, because if we remembered it, that would certainly help.
Yeah, well, I enjoy the company of Daniel in the chat for a lot of reasons. One of them is that he just pays better attention, and he's much younger than me. He can keep facts in his head. There's a lot of stuff that I've forgotten about already. But in any case, so please tune into the Geekscape Book Club that will be in just a few short hours. Have you finished your reading, Mr. Connor?
Ask me at 3:29.
Okay, that's what I expected. All right, Daniel's got like a really specific thing, so he's gonna basically pass me a note after study hall, and I will read it and share it with the class next week. That is all the time we have for this week. We will see you next week, and as the great Stan Lee would say, Excelsior!
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.